From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
In the spirit of compromise and as a step in the right direction, I'm willing to support, and right now I endorse, your pension reform bill.
Martin Luther King was killed going down to Memphis, Tennessee to do what? To stand with public employees, garbage, sanitation workers who were striking in Memphis. 40 years later or so, we're in an environment where the governor of Illinois is just using public employees and casting such disrespect on public employees, and you just shake your head.
This is the best way to drive the talent immediately out of Illinois. Certainly other states, Iowa, Missouri, are already ramping up their efforts to come after our best and brightest. So I think there is faith still and expectation that the legislature and the governor won't let this happen.
Well, that was Dave Treader. He's president of the Federation of Independent Colleges in Illinois. Higher education funding tied up in the budget stalemate now in its seventh month. That includes those MAP grants that go to low-income students who attend not only the private schools but public schools as well. Before that, we heard from the Illinois Federation of Teachers, President Dan Montgomery, and, of course, Governor Bruce Rauner. It was a busy week for the governor, and we're going to try to sort through that on today's show. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He is the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, Amanda Vinicky, Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. And our guest today, political reporter Tony Arnold with WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago. Tony, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Sean. Good to be here.
Tony, you covered a lot of what the governor talked about this week, a couple of different news conferences hastily called. Let's start with that and give us an idea of what he was talking about in that clip we heard at the beginning regarding public employee pensions.
You're right. The Governor Rauner was all over Chicago this week, making one big announcement after another, and it was just hard to catch your breath of the first announcement before the next one came. So as what Rauner was talking about in the opening clip there was about the pension systems. This has been not talked about much lately. He's been so focused on these business reforms that he's been talking about in the turnaround agenda that the pensions conversation has been virtually non-existent in what you're hearing in the public. So this was a big deal that he was even calling and talking about pensions, let alone what he was going to say. And then when reporters showed up, he comes out with the top Republicans in the House and the Senate, Christine Rodonio and Jim Durkin, and says that the three of them are all going to now support Senate President John Cullerton's pension plan. And if you remember that from several years ago now, what Cullerton had proposed was to very, very quickly summarize this, it's called consideration. The trick is the pension funds are so bad, there has to be some way to find out how to make them affordable because the funds are so much in debt and behind. So and the problem that the state's running into is that the previous plan had been found unconstitutional. So how do you do this? Well, John Cullerton says, he said several years ago, the best way to do this is to make the employee choose one thing or another. The employee has to choose which benefit is going to be cut or reduced or changed. And that way, it's the employee making the decision, not the employer, and that's going to make it constitutional. So Rauner saying, we support this idea. One caveat, Rauner says, is that it means that pay raises for employees are going to be taken out of collective bargaining, and that's a huge union issue. So there's a lot of conflict in this statement because unions had endorsed Cullerton's plan several years ago. It was such in limbo, it wasn't really clear what they thought of it these days. And then for Rauner to say this, it's like, well, I don't know that unions are really going to go for this. It turns out Cullerton immediately after the press conference was like, that's not my plan. I'm not endorsing what Rauner just said he's endorsing. And there's been some miscommunication or something here. And as a result, you know, it just caused this whole confusion for 24 hours here about what does Rauner support? Where is Cullerton now? Are we even talking about pensions again? Are we still on the turnaround agenda and the state budget? It's just been a kind of this whirlwind of a trip here on the pensions front.
And apparently nobody wants to take credit, apparently, and that's something. Well, let me first of all point out that most people on this panel, except for Tony, are members of the State University retirement system, so we are impacted by the pension discussion. Amanda, what has surprised me a little bit was it does appear as though some negotiations, some discussions were going on behind the scenes. This wasn't Bruce Rauner going to the podium suddenly out of the blue and saying, you know, there was some deal. At least they had been talking.
No, it appears as if the Rauner administration is wanting to look active ahead of his State of the State address or something. But why he wanted to make an announcement at this point in time, or even without Senate President John Cullerton standing beside him, is unclear. Because you'd think if they really had an agreement that, you know, present a united front, that may have, of course, put Cullerton in some sort of pickle if Madigan hadn't signed on to the plan. And Rauner admitted during this press conference, you know, he hadn't really been in talks with Madigan and had a whole lot of continued to slam Michael Madigan. Really, frankly, actually had some harsh words for Cullerton, even as he came out in support of this plan. So, Sean, you're right. Really, the takeaway is that it seems as if there was, and maybe now even still could be, after Rauner did eventually, the office walked back from his words a little bit, there could be a pension deal. This is one that would save $1 billion and at the very least perhaps be a test case. There is a Chicago pension case before the state Supreme Court. They've already heard oral arguments and we're waiting for any sort of decision there that includes some of this consideration notion, but really this would be a true test of it, and it could triangulate really Madigan, kind of put him off. If both the governor's office and the Senate were in a bipartisan fashion able to pass something taking a step toward Illinois' pension debt, one that, as Tony noted, unions had previously even been on board with, that would have put a lot of pressure on Madigan, and instead he really, really bungled it. So what we're going to have to watch and see. It was interesting to me that, you know, during the press conference, the governor said, hey, this is the same thing. It's the same basic principle as Cullerton had talked about. He just needs to get his words right. And then hours later, it was the governor who had to backpedal and, quote, perhaps the governor was not as precise in his word selection as the Democrats would have liked. So in a sense, the Rauner administration had to eat it. I think shows to those who are watching Governor Bruce Rauner, unions say he's bloodthirsty, basically, for their demise. And this showed it. It was almost as if they had an agreement and he just couldn't stop himself from taking an opportunity, reining it in a little bit, and then just going off on unions.
Yeah, if you look back at what Cullerton initially proposed several years ago, the idea was I'm a member of the state university's retirement system. I could call Champaign today and voluntarily give up any future benefits at all. Nothing would stop me. But the state can't unilaterally force me to do that. And so the theory is if the state offers me something else of value that would persuade me to say, I'll take the other thing. If Bruce Rauner were to say, Charlie Wheeler, I'll give you $1 million, free and clear, if you renounce your pension rights, I might think about it. And the Cullerton plan initially was you can stay in the pension plan that you have now, but forego state coverage of health insurance as a retiree, or you can agree to these reduced benefits in return for keeping health insurance once you've retired, subsidized by the state. That plan fell apart when the Supreme Court ruled that indeed health care coverage was one of the benefits covered under the pension clause of the Constitution. So then Cullerton devised another plan, which in essence would say you can keep your current benefits, particularly the one that allows your retirement annuity to increase by 3% compounded annually, but you can't count future pay raises into the pensionable base, or you can agree to have your future pay raises counted into the pensionable base at the time of your retirement, but you have to forego the 3% compounded increase and settle instead for a simple increase of 3% or half the rate of inflation, whichever is less.
Charlie, let me stop you there real quick, because they said this would save about $1 billion for the state. That doesn't seem like a lot when you're talking about pensions. I mean, it's a lot of money. Nobody is going to argue that, but it doesn't seem like as much.
The problem is, and I'm not sure that the Cullerton plan, which Bruce Rauner misconstrued because he just can't stop himself from bashing unions at every hand's turn, I'm not sure that it would pass muster instead unless the third option was do nothing, keep what you have now. Because by definition, if they're going to save money, they're going to have to do it by reducing benefits. So they have to provide some kind of a carrot that would induce someone to voluntarily accept this.
The political theory being that, and this is where even the Cullerton folks kind of admit, there do need to be some tweaks to labor law in order for this to work. Basically, they say all it needs to be is that there's a guarantee that once you make this choice, collective bargaining cannot go back and
It has to be an irrevocable decision.
Into law. Like, that's what they want to do. Rauner is trying to say
a lot less than what Rauner tried to explain it as.
Right.
I get the impression he had no clue what he was talking about, but that's just me. And I'm not even sure the consideration factor would work, that the court would approve that, unless the third option was, I don't choose either. I'll keep what I have now. And
right.
The reason it doesn't save much money is because you're not going to be able to save money unless you really do slash benefits. And the court has said pretty clearly you can't do that. So if you wanted to look at it kind of from a cynic's point of view, you might say this is just another plan that's going to be put forward. We're going to throw it out there, and this will enable Rauner to propose another phony budget saying, oh, we're going to save $1 billion by these pension changes, and not have to face up to the fact that the honest thing to do is figure out a way to pay the unfunded liability, to bring it down. Going forward, we can do whatever we want. We could say everybody hired tomorrow gets no pension at all, nothing, and that would be okay. We'd have to pay Social Security on them, which is something you can't put off or avoid paying, as we've done with our own pension systems over the years. But there's the difficulty for these people is they're trying to figure out a way to weasel out of having to pay the money that's due retirees and current workers. And I just don't see a way around it, unless, as I say, you figure out a way to make people voluntarily give it up. And if the governor wants to offer me $1 million, I'll consider it.
Supporters of this plan would say that this, you know, Charlie got the cynical view there of why this wouldn't be constitutional. Supporters of this concept would say that any sort of salary increases are not guaranteed. There's nothing that says that you need to have a higher salary. So this is sort of taking a forward-looking view, leave current earnings untouched, but going forward, give people a choice. It's, as we said, either you can keep this higher system, but then your future salary hikes are not going to be counted toward that richer pension benefit, or you give up that richer pension benefit going forward, and we will continue to include these hikes. So who knows? Again, it is a major constitutional question, but this is clearly one that Senate President John Cullerton and his legal staff truly believe in. I don't think in that regard it is a gimmick. There's been a thought that, you know, the legislature, even with Senate Bill 1, threw something to the courts just so they could say that they'd done something, maybe prove why a tax hike was needed, get people off their backs. It does seem that Cullerton and that Rauner has come around to this way of thinking as well. He says it doesn't go far enough and he wants to do more. But regardless, that they believe that this is legal. Really, only the courts can tell us.
Let me move on here if I could, because Tony, I want to get back to you. You also covered another news conference the governor held this week. And this one, our governor was involved with at least this week. This involved Chicago public schools. And I'm sure this caused some interest in the city there. What was the proposal that was put forth, and what was the reaction to it?
The proposal is, again, coming from Governor Rauner and the top Republicans in the House and the Senate. The proposal is a few different things related to Chicago Public Schools. Chicago Public Schools is in a very, it's a microcosm of what's going on at the state. It's had financial problems for years. They've had round after round of layoffs in the past. And what's going on now, they've budgeted, the school system here budgeted this current budget cycle that it's in a hole of hundreds of millions of dollars. And right now, they don't have a way to fill that hole. So they've talked about layoffs potentially in the middle of the school year. And that's the situation that's kind of caused this chaos that happened this week with this proposal, which is that the Republicans are suggesting that the state take over Chicago Public Schools, and Chicago Public Schools should have the ability to declare bankruptcy, which is a legal situation, a legal term, you know, bankruptcy. And Rauner's point was bankruptcy doesn't mean that it's this bad thing. It just means that you're going to be able to restructure your debt, and also, Rauner points out, restructure your contract that you'd have with the teachers' union. So that caused a whole chain of events. Things got very heated. Democrats in Springfield, Madigan, Cullerton, rank-and-file legislators from Chicago all said, no, this is not a thing. We aren't going to do this. This is bad policy. The mayor of the city of Chicago said he's 100% against this idea. The Chicago Public Schools said, no, they're not going to hand over control of this system to the state. It's where this proposal goes from here is anyone's guess, but it has done a few different things. There's intensified negotiations going on now that weren't going on before, as long as a month ago, between Chicago Public Schools and the teachers union. So I think that they're trying to actually get some sort of contract because they see this proposal out there and they don't want to really have to go down that road if they don't have to. And I think it's just also just drawn a lot more attention to, is Chicago Public Schools going to be laying off people in the middle of the school year? What's that going to look like? And so that's what, practically speaking, is playing out right now.
I think a lot of people had a hard time, just kind of had to bite their tongues watching this, because just the notion that the state wants to take over a struggling system, given the obvious issues that Illinois is facing, 7 months without a budget, and you want to take over what?
Well,
you want to be in charge?
Illinois has taken over other districts, so what would make this different?
Well, and that's part of the argument that the Republicans said, and it kind of goes to what Bruce Rauner has continually made, the point that both Cullerton and Madigan, Senate President and House Speaker, Democrats from the city of Chicago. And, you know, what's good for the goose should be good for the gander, and that Chicago gets all sorts of special deals, he says, be it a request that pensions not be part of the collective bargaining going forward, for example, you know, kind of all sorts of changes that Chicago gets that he says, hey, what about the rest of the state? And this is one where other school districts could come under state control, so why not? CPS is kind of their argument for it.
Well, the difference in why not is the fact that the Chicago School District has something like one out of every five children in the state of Illinois in it. The other school districts that the state has taken over, and there's been six or eight, I don't remember the exact number, probably don't have as many kids as your typical neighborhood in Chicago. So on a magnitude of scale, it's huge. And the complaint, and it's longstanding, it goes back decades, the suburbs in particular think that they're being cheated because Chicago gets more for their kids than the suburbs do, by and large. And part of it is because the state puts more money into school districts like Chicago that have a significant number of low-income kids, because all the research shows it costs more to educate a low-income kid. And the city, on the other hand, argues that suburban and downstate districts get a big break because the state pays their share of the teachers' pension costs, whereas Chicago taxpayers pay something like 95% of the cost of their teachers, as well as contributing state income taxes, sales taxes, and so on that go to help pay teachers' retirement benefits for suburban and downstate teachers. So this is a debate that's been going on for a long time. Senator Andy Menar, a Democrat from Bunker Hill, has legislation pending to try and revise the formula to even out some of these inequities, but his rational approach doesn't seem to get very far in this heightened campaign never-ending campaign season in which we find ourselves.
Let me move on from local schools, if I could, because we do want to save some time here. Higher education still without funding for this fiscal year, and it's starting to have some impact, according to the university presidents. In fact, one school came out this week, Chicago State University, and said it could run out of operating money in March. It wouldn't be able to pay anybody. Is anyone paying attention to this problem in the higher levels of state government, Amanda?
Oh, I think they're certainly paying attention to it, and that's obvious given the exchange of memos that have gone back and forth from the university presidents and the Rauner administration. There was first a memo that went out from the governor's office that basically said that, wow, these universities, their high-spending administrations, flying people all over the place, university presidents getting housing, this is outrageous, you want more money, what, clean up your act. University presidents sent their own letter saying, hey, we'll agree, we are open to some changes. We haven't gotten a lot of detail on what that is. Then came this news from Chicago State University, which is really a focus because it is the only public institution in Illinois that serves over 75% of minorities. So a major campus, particularly for Black Chicagoans, that they go to easy access there, and one of the more affordable public schools that's really struggling, again, not able to even make payroll in March. And while there was yet another press conference from students saying, we need this MAP money, this is very distressing for all of us to help low-income students pay their tuition, you had another memo released from the Rauner administration that bash CSU for not doing a good job of graduating students. And so that kind of set off another firestorm, CSU saying, hey, you don't understand. We're dealing with primarily low-income people who are coming back to school or transfers, maybe going part-time. So it's just been this exchange of really bitter remarks. And at the same time, you're having universities continue to struggle with no answer for how they're going to make ends meet.
And to me, the significant problem isn't so much the university administration. My apologies to the presidents and all the other people in the bureaucracy. It's for the students, particularly those students who need those MAP grants to be able to go to school. There was a report, someone did a calculation and said something like 1,000 fewer students have enrolled for spring semester across the state because they don't have the MAP grants. We heard the clip from the president of the independent colleges, the private colleges, saying we're losing our best and brightest. That should be the concern, rather than taking shots, cherry-picking newspaper stories to take shots at higher education administrators. Sure, they make mistakes. But on the other hand, Rauner's paying a lot of people a lot of money and has nothing to show for it so far. So I would say I would focus in on doing something for the students. Because if push comes to shove, if the universities have to close, or if a lot of kids from suburban families get turned away because they can't get those scholarships, the lawmakers in those districts, a lot of them Republican, are going to hear from a lot of angry parents, and they may decide that it's no longer to my advantage to be a Rauner robot.
Well, this gets a lot of attention downstate because if you're in Champaign, for example, you have the U of I, or Carbondale, you have SIU. Or any of the other schools that are out there. Tony, you're in Chicago. Are you guys hearing much about higher education problems? There's certainly a lot of kids in Chicago who go to higher education, but and to different colleges and universities. But is this really getting much attention, any traction up there?
It is, but not. I mean, keep in mind, you have the Chicago Public Schools has been getting a lot of attention this week, and so has the pensions that we just talked about. But this is also high on the list, I think, because a few different reasons. One, you have this is really the what's funding universities and college students is kind of the biggest holdout left of this whole budget impasse and what's not getting funded. This is kind of the biggest one that's left that hasn't been taken to court and hasn't had a judge say, hey, you got to fund universities or you got to fund scholarships for students like so many other state services have done. And then on top of that, in Chicago, at least, you have a lot of private institutions, whether it's University of Chicago or DePaul or Loyola. And so they aren't necessarily receiving the same amount of money, those institutions, as the public universities. But a school like Chicago State, if that closes or starts, you know, just turning students away, or students can't go there, can't afford to pay for the education, that's going to be that's already a big deal. There's already a lot of major coverage of this, and I think it's only going to get even bigger as this goes on. And if there's no appropriation that the legislature takes up somewhat soon, like they did at the end of 2015 for some government services, then there's going to be a really big conflict here in the city.
But don't you think it's true, though, Tony, that places like DePaul and Loyola, Northwestern, Roosevelt, University of Chicago, all private schools are going to be impacted if their kids can't get MAP grants?
Maybe U of C
can probably carry them.
And some of the schools have done that, actually. While the MAP grant money hasn't come through, some of the universities have already said, okay, fine, we'll absorb some of the costs to keep these students still in classes, and then hopefully the state comes through and gives the money, at least gives us some indication of how much they'd give us to reimburse us for MAP grants.
Have city colleges said anything on that? If they have,
I haven't heard from city colleges on that. I honestly don't know.
Because I know downstate there are a number of community colleges that have said they're not going to be able to float the MAP grants for the second semester.
Well, we're running out of time here. Let me move along to Amanda Vinicky, Notes from the Field.
Well, we had the State Board of Elections take up an interesting case this week. That is, three judges from St. Clair County who are sitting on the bench now say that they will resign in December after, of course, the November election. But because of that, instead of running for retention, where it would take fewer voters to get them to keep their jobs, they're running as if they're brand new judges. That's at least the question before the State Board of Elections. And in a tied decision, they do get to stay on the ballot. Why I think this is noteworthy is this trio of judges, all Democrats, represented by Michael Casper. He's a well-known election attorney, close ties to Speaker Madigan and to Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And Casper, in arguing this case that a lot of people have questions about, members of the judiciary playing a bit and toying with state law, he said, hey, this is better for democracy, was his line.
Well, that's always what we're looking out for. And Tony Arna, let me go to you with 1 minute left.
I think what I'd just say is that earlier this week, right before Rauner actually called for the state takeover of Chicago Public Schools, he spoke at this breakfast event in downtown Chicago and told a story that I'd never really heard him tell before, which is, it's well known that Rauner and Mayor Rahm Emanuel are old friends, but I've never heard Rauner tell the story of how they first met. And so he goes into this whole detail about how Rauner got a call from the White House chief of staff at the time, who was Bill Clinton's chief of staff, basically saying, hey, we have this White House staffer here who wants to go back to home to Chicago and make some money before he eventually runs for public office again. And so would you meet with him? And so Rauner tells this whole story about how the two first met, and Rauner kind of gave Rahm his start in business. And it goes from there. You can hear the whole thing on WBEZ.org.
I also mentioned that higher education had not received money here in this fiscal year. University of Illinois making its decision during its Board of Trustees meeting that it would keep in-state tuition for freshman students at the same level as the year before, and they froze tuition the year before that. So I think that it shows that higher education apparently trying to, or at least paying attention to what the perception is at the state capitol. Well, that'll do it for today's State Week in Review. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and WBEZ political reporter Tony Arnold. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search WUIS on iTunes. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.